This is the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
Take me out to the ball
game. Take me out to the crowd. Greg Cody's coughing and he will hack. I don't care if I ever get back, so it's root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame, for it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
Wow, Yeti bailed you out there.
Well, that's definitely better than my version.
I just wanted Greg to sit in his... I wanted to just hear Dad. Brad, do you even know the lyrics to Take Me Out to the Ball Game? Or do you
I don't know
like...
all of them, no.
No, that's right. At Greg Cody Day, you had to read them. You forgot them, right?
I did, yeah.
He'll start saying, Brada dee dee dee.
Right. My expertise ends at Cracker Jack. But take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and that kind of thing.
Peanuts.
Isn't it peanuts and Cracker Jacks?
Oh, peanuts.
Okay, what do you think I said?
I thought you said penis and Cracker Jacks.
Okay, here's the thing about this episode, man. We are celebrating
America's pastime. Well, at least what used to be.
America's past its prime. Baseball. That's right. The sport that was flourishing in the 1940s through the 80s and then has been struggling ever since and just went through a 3-month work stoppage and now is heaving into its season. And to celebrate the fact that baseball has the oldest demographic of fans of any sport, we have two guests on today's episode who are a combined 151 years old.
Yes. Ladies and gentlemen. And we should throw you in there. We're over 200 with you three.
Oh, counting the hosts. Yeah. Yes, counting the hosts. But
are you saying this is our MLB preview episode 3 days after the season started?
Yeah, 3 days after the season started.
Nice.
We wanted to make sure it was going to start, you know, after that lockup. That's what happened. But the Marlins, we're based in Miami, as you know. The Marlins home opener isn't until later in the week, this Thursday night. So, but we're happy to have a friend of the show, FOS, Tim Kirchen, the ESPN baseball expert on. He's a young pup. He's 65. And then later in the show, the 86-year-old legend himself, Stratomatic inventor Hal Richman, is on the show with us today.
Stratting it.
Don't we also have Jerry Garcia on the show?
You know, he makes the briefest appearance possible.
The Jerry Garcia. This is impressive.
It is the guy from The Grateful Dead that we reference.
Wow.
And
I thought
for a minute we were doing a seance and he was on the show. Stu Gotts would have been involved in that. I don't think we could get Jerry Garcia in a seance without Stu Gotts to help. But
yeah,
Christopher, you start talking right now because I sound like shit.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've said it all. You teed it up. You put the ball on the tee for this episode, I'd say.
Yep, just like I did for you when you were 5.5 years old.
And now all it's time for is, I think that we should just get to let's just jump right into it.
Let's do it.
FOS, Tim Kirchen, he's just a delightful voice to hear.
Yeah.
And we caught him. We talked to him like the day before the season started. So he was busy and in grind mode and he was ready to talk some hardball. And let's talk to him right now. Tim Kirchen.
Timmy the K.
Bring it.
Tom.
Hey, Tim.
Hey, Chris. Hi, Greg.
How's it going?
Okay, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Doing all right, man. I appreciate you carving some time. This is peak busy for you, right?
Yeah.
When is your busiest time of the year?
This is pretty good. It's pretty bad, but it's pretty good. Yeah. I like being this busy because we got good stuff ahead.
Tim, it's good to see you. We miss you. We were just talking before air, like how great it is to see you every time. But you sent me a text. I actually did my first broadcast last week with Billy. We did a Marlins spring training game doing color commentary. And you sent me a nice text. I just want to thank you on the front end because I'm telling you, Tim, I was a little nervous right before. And I thought back on your text. I was like, just relax, watch the game. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, we don't watch the games very well anymore. And we say a lot of things that don't mean anything. So I think I said, when you say something, teach us something, educate us, tell us something we don't know, which is what exactly. I try to do. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's what I try to do.
Tim, keeping in mind, this is a Miami-based podcast. I'm teeing you up here. I want you to name one surprise team in each league that's going to exceed expectations this year.
Come on, Tim.
Okay. I'm going to say the Tigers are much better than people think. Now, I'm not saying the Tigers are going to make the playoffs. I'm saying the Tigers are really starting to build something there. They have some really interesting young starting pitching with Skubal and Mize and Manning. I mean, they've got some interesting arms on their club. They picked up Austin Meadows, which is really going to help their lineup. They're not one of the six playoff teams, but I think they're a team that's going to make a nice little jump in that league. In the National League, again, this is not a real surprise, but I like what I saw from the Phillies this spring. The Phillies should have been better last year and in recent years. They haven't been to the playoffs since 2011, but they added, you know, Nick Castellanos, who is an elite hitter. They added Kyle Schwarber, who was a dominant player, certainly at times last year. They should have scored way more runs last year. And now you look at their lineup, it's pretty darn good. And when you can go Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, top of the rotation, if they can find some bullpen help, which they've had trouble doing, I think they're a surprise enough team that they can make the playoffs in the National League.
Now, I can make the case for the Marlins only because I think their top three starters are really good. They've improved a weak lineup. They have a top six farm system right now. Make the case for if you had to make the case for the Marlins and be optimistic, what is the upside to Miami?
I'm not sold on the Marlins yet. I love their pitching like everybody else and their depth of pitching. They have kids in the minor leagues on the way. I just know they're a subpar offensive team and were a really bad offensive team last year. Now, they've gotten better. Some of the people they've added, Joey Wendell is a really helpful, useful guy at multiple infield positions. He takes a great at bat. Jorge Soler has tremendous power. If he's anywhere close to the guy we saw in the postseason or a few years ago with the Royals, he's really going to help them. But look, that division is pretty darn good. The Braves are the defending world champs, and they have a chance to be maybe better than they were at least in the regular season last year. The Mets, if they can ever get their pitching healthy, which is a big if, are pretty darn good too. And I just told you, I think the Phillies are going to the playoffs. So I think the Marlins are a fourth place team in that division. But another team that has some interesting weapons and a team that is clearly on the way up.
Interesting weapons is such a nice way of saying they have no offense. I appreciate that, at least, though, Tim. Thank you. What do you think about all this sign-stealing technology? I'm not even sure. I want to explain it to the audience, but I'm not even sure how it really works yet. The catcher is going to have some way to get to the pitcher, where he wants it and what pitch he wants and where it's at. It's all confusing to me. I don't like it. I think sign-stealing is part of the game. If I'm stealing your signs, come up with better signs. Like, I think this is the weird. I'd rather have fake robot umpires than this technology. Like, what's up with this?
Well, I don't want robot umpires, and I don't want this technology either, because I'm with you, Chris. I think it's an art to stealing signs. Ted Simmons was the greatest one of all time. He taught it to Paul Molitor, who taught it to the Blue Jays when he went there, and they ended up winning a World Series. I just think what we're doing now is not necessary. I think we should be better at giving the signs better, hiding them better. And the thing that really bothers me is, are the infielders going to know what pitch is coming? Cal Ripken pulled me aside during a playoff game about, I don't know, 15 years ago and said, typical Cal Ripken, did you see what happened in the sixth inning tonight? And I said, no, what? He goes, it's a playoff game. He said the catcher went out to the mound to change the sign to the pitcher, and none of the infielders came in to know what he's doing. Ripken looked at me and said, there wasn't one pitch thrown in my entire career when I was on defense that I didn't know what pitch was being thrown and at what location it was being thrown. I told this exact story to Ryan Sandberg from the same time period. He stopped me in the middle of it and said, wait a minute, are you going to tell me that the infielders were not in on the pitcher changing the sign and the catcher changing the sign in the middle of an at-bat? I said, yes, that's what I'm telling you. He goes, just like Ripken, not one pitch was thrown in my career that I didn't know the pitch and the location. And then I would tell Mark Grace on every single pitch, this is what is coming. And we're going to lose, in theory, we're going to lose some of that. And I'm not sure that's good for the game. And I definitely don't think it's necessary.
This technology, this rule change is just the Astros' fault, right? That's what this is. If that never happens, then this doesn't happen, right? Like this is just the league feeling like they've got, like they're embarrassed of that. So like, we're going to fix that.
Yeah. I think the Astros are certainly partly to blame for this. And sometimes I just think we worry a little bit too much about stuff in baseball when we should just let the guys play once in a while.
Yeah.
Does the coveted Tim Kirchen seal of approval go to the universal DH?
Yeah, it does, but for only one reason. Just the uniformity of the rule is important. I have found it preposterous that since 1973, we played with two different sets of rules. Last year, for instance, the Red Sox finished the season in Washington with an interleague series, and they had to win, and they don't even get to use their DH in a National League ballpark. To me, it was unfair. It was stupid. I also find it ridiculous that National League pitchers, American League pitchers never have to bat until they go into a National League ballpark. And now some of them haven't hit since high school. Yeah. And now they have to hit in a major league game. To me, that is ridiculous also. So I'm in favor of the universal DH, but I just wrote 4,000 words for ESPN.com the other day saying how much I'm going to miss pitchers hitting. Madison Bumgarner hit two home runs on opening day once. He's the only pitcher ever to do that. We're obviously never going to see that again. By the way, Adrian Beltre never hit a home run on opening day. He hit 477 homers. Johnny Bench never hit an opening day homer. He hit 389. But we had a pitcher that did that, hit two. And Bartolo Colon, that was like the biggest home run of the season in 2019 when he hit that home run. So I think we should – I know I'm going to miss pitchers hitting. Because when you see a really good hitting pitcher, that's interesting. When you see a really bad hitting pitcher who actually gets a hit off a good pitcher, that's fascinating. I've got all sorts of stories and stats about pitchers hitting, and those days, sadly for me, are over.
So it's because you want them to be playing by the same – because it seems like you want it, but you don't. So it's because of the, it's because you want the rules to be the same, that weighs more important to you?
Yes. Look, if I were in charge of this, I would have the pitchers hit in both leagues.
Okay? Yes, no more DH.
That's what I would do, but that's not practical in today's games. We try to keep pitchers healthier from running the bases and swinging the bat. We have to take them off the field more often, but I'm not in favor of that. I'm just trying to be logical here that one of the two options, I would rather have all the pitchers hit, but that simply wasn't going to happen.
I'm with you.
So, Commissioner of Baseball Tim Kirchen is with us.
That'd be awesome.
It would be awesome. I would absolutely love it. Commissioner, what do you think of the defensive shift? It's either a very smart analytical thing to do, or it's one of the worst things to ever happen to baseball.
Well, I think it's time to get rid of the shift. And Mark Teixeira has talked me into this. I argued with him and many others for years and years, but now he has convinced me that this is at least a chance to get away from all the walks, homers, and strikeouts. For instance, big left-handed hitter. We'll just use Joey Gallo, okay? It could be almost anybody. He comes to the plate. He looks at the right side of the infield, and there are three infielders over there, and one of them is in shallow right field. He looks at it and says, well, I can't hit it through there, so I'm going to have to hit it over the shift. That's my only chance to get a hit because, I'm sorry, this is what I've come around to. There are so many hitters who are simply incapable of hitting the ball to the opposite field.
They or put a bunt down or lay a bunt down. Am I right, Tim? I mean, Jesus.
Right. Once in a while. But they don't know how to bunt either because the industry has told them, I don't want you to hit a soft single to left field. And I don't want you to bunt either. It's not even the player's fault anymore. The industry has told them, we want you to pull the ball, get it up in the air, and hit the ball out of the ballpark. But if we start each play with two fielders on each side of second base and all feet on the infield dirt when the play begins, now, just using Joey Gallo, he looks at the field and says, wow, I could hit a hard ground ball up the middle and actually get a hit here.
Yeah.
Maybe that would take some of our guys and say, all right, I don't have to get every ball up in the air. Now, I'm not suggesting this is going to work. I'm just saying I am willing to give this a try because I repeat, there is way too many walks, strikeouts, and homers and not enough in between. And the good stuff in a lot of ways is the in-between stuff.
See, that's why like I kind of agree with you on the shift rules, but like there's part of me that's just like, why can't we teach kids how to hit like you used to know how to hit? Why can't we get back to higher out? Like, do we just have to punt on that? And that's why you've kind of given in on like, all right, fine, let's, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, Chris, it's too late. We have to start with our 10 and 12 year olds and say, okay, look, we're going to teach you to be a good hitter, but we're going to show you other ways to hit other than launching.
I'm doing that with my 4 year old.
Right.
I got my 4 year old hitting on the outside tee. I'm doing the tee game with her and we're going the opposite field. We're putting the ball deep in the zone. Like I used to coach baseball, but I got her like my daughter's softball team will have a hitter on their hands.
Right. Well, just imagine though, if you've been told by your organization, right, by the industry, this is the way that you hit. And then they come to you and say, all right, we want to change the way that you've been swinging the bat for the last 15 years. And we want you to face Max Scherzer tonight and put that into play. I don't think that's going to happen. If we went to a great NBA jump shooter right now and said, okay, you know, the way you're releasing the ball, you know how you don't watch the flight of the ball when you really should. You know how long it would take him to make that adjustment? He would say, no, this is the way I shoot. I can't change this now. And that's unfortunately where we are in baseball. And it's going to take changing our 12-year-olds so they know different ways to hit when they get to be 24 and make it to the big leagues.
Like I need a Miguel Cabrera. I need a Manny Ramirez. I need a Tony Gwynn. Those type of hitters. Like you're just telling me I'm not going to see those anymore.
Yeah. I saw Miguel Cabrera at a Tigers game against the Yankees. This is probably 10 years ago. Okay. They shift on him and he hits a routine ground ball to where the second baseman is supposed to be.
Yep.
He runs to first base and he's just laughing at the Yankees dugout. And it wasn't a big hit. It didn't score a run, but he was just looking at him like, are you serious that you think you can shift on me and I can't hit a ground ball right there? That's ridiculous. But that's Miguel Cabrera. He's one of the greatest hitters of all time. And if they shifted on Tony Gwynn, and I've heard this 100 times from people in the game, they shifted like they do on Tony Gwynn. He did 400 every year because he would figure out, well, if you're going to leave that spot open, I'm going to hit it there.
It's wild that they won't. It's wild. Dad, you look so ominous right now.
Yeah, the lighting here is kind of crazy. Tim, before we let you go, I want to veer off baseball for just a minute. Christopher and I in the podcast are doing a father-son Olympics where we're challenging each other in free throw shooting and golf and several other events. If you and your son had a Kirchen Olympics, what are the events that you would dominate, even at your age?
Well, my son's a good little athlete, but I played more golf than he has, so I will beat him in golf, although he thinks he can beat me now. I'm not sure he can. He just hasn't played enough. Basketball, he'll never be able to outshoot me, and I'm 65 years old. But
yes.
I will tell you, I am the slowest man alive now. Need a hip replacement. So
it can't be true. Alive?
I can't beat my son in one-on-one anymore. And well, the last time I played, we played to three and I beat him 3-2. Look, I stink. Let's be clear about this. So I can't beat him in one-on-one, but I can outshoot him still. He'll be the first one to acknowledge that. Any other sport that requires, you know, two healthy hips, he's going to beat me. So I think we'll start with golf and basketball, certain parts of basketball, and I'll have a chance.
Tim, when's the last time you sent food back at a restaurant?
You know, I can honestly say I've only done that one time. I'm pretty much a well-done guy. A lot of people just yell at me when I order a steak medium well. I've ordered it well before, and the waiter looks at me like I'm a complete idiot. I love seafood, but I even tell them, make sure you can cook the salmon, don't worry. And the salmon came back essentially raw in the middle. And I very politely said, could you just throw this on the grill for another minute and a half? And they did. That's the only time in 65 years that I've ever sent anything back at a restaurant.
I need you to, something else food related real fast. I need you to make me feel like less of a bad person. Have you ever fibbed to your wife about things you may have eaten on a road trip, because like maybe she wants you to be eating healthy and you veered off? Have we ever, you know, fibbed to the wife about, you know, maybe if you indulged a little?
No, I would lie the other way around. I would say that I had a steak when I actually had another salad. Listen, at my age and my size, every meal that I eat looks like the bottom of a hamster cage anyway. So she wants me to eat more bad stuff because she thinks I'm too small, which is all true. But I've just decided at my age, if I'm going to keep going here, I have to eat well. Otherwise, it's going to show up a lot quicker on a guy who's 5'4" than a guy who's 6'4".
Yeah, that's true.
Tim, you mentioned basketball. When you're on a pickup game court, what's the angriest you've ever been at a whippersnapper? You know, somebody half your age, maybe a third of your age, who was either showing off or fouling or something like that.
So our team won 7 games in a row in the gym, which I used to play in at lunchtime. A new guy who we've never seen before joins our team for the 8th game. So we've already won 7 games in a row. And I have like 50, not 50 points. I mean, 50 buckets in 7 games. Okay. So I, in like the first possession of the 8th game, throw a terrible cross court pass. It is intercepted by the other team and they go in for a layup. And the new guy looks at me and goes, come on, man. Like I'm not even trying. Okay. So I was a little bit insulted by that. In fact, I was furious. So he was way younger than me and way bigger than me. So I threw a very hard chest pass to him from a very great distance away. Yes. He recognized I was really angry. He took the ball, ran towards me, threw it like a baseball. And then we scuffled for about, I would say, 2 seconds. I lost that fight badly. It was at lunchtime at the YMCA. I was 45 years old. So all of this qualifies as the most pathetic part of my entire life.
No.
To get in a fight
in a
lunchtime basketball game with someone I don't even know. And the only thing worse than that is he was on my team. How can that happen? So that was the most embarrassing thing ever. I always try to answer the question, Greg. I hate answering that question, but that's the answer. That's the angriest I've ever been.
Well, you had a right to be angry. I would have whistled that guy for being a bad teammate for reacting like he did when you had a pass intercepted. Come on.
Well,
you're the leading scorer. Give you a break. Christ.
When you go into an enemy gym like that and nobody knows you, believe me, I've done this 1,000 times. You play by the rules that they play by. And then once they trust you, if they trust you, then you can assert yourself a little bit more. But it's their gym. You're a visitor. You do what they tell you to do. You play their style of game until you say, all right, I know how to handle all this.
Tim, we'll let you go, but I want to ask you, harking back to baseball again, so much nowadays is negative, and we've talked about a lot of it, the things that need to change and so forth. What is it about your enduring love affair with baseball? As a new season begins, what is it about this game that you just continue to cherish and always will?
Well, first, the players today are unbelievably good. In the last 10 years, starting with Trout and Harper, it's amazing how many great young players have come into the game. And now we have Bobby Witt Jr. And last year we had Wander Franco. They're everywhere. But to answer your question, Greg, I just love the box scores. I just love the rhythm of the season. I just love to wake up every single morning, drink a Diet Mountain Dew, and look at the box scores and see who got three hits last night and what teams are doing with their bullpen and all the strange things that happen. And it all starts with opening day. I mean, beautiful things happen on opening day if you're paying attention. And I'll finish with this. 82 Rangers. I'm covering the Rangers. I'm the beat guy for the Dallas Morning News. And George Wright is a rookie center fielder for the Rangers. So he goes 3-for-5 on opening day 1982. And I say to George after the game, George, did you have a good time today? And he goes, yeah, I've never been to a major league game before. So the first game he had ever attended, he got three hits in that game. Think about that for a second. So those are the little moments that happen on opening day and basically happen all throughout the season if you're paying attention. And every day something might happen that you've never seen before. And Greg, that's what keeps me coming back.
Tim, we miss you. We love you. Thank you for carving time out for us today. We'll talk soon, hopefully.
Okay, fellas. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Greg. Talk to you guys soon.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
All right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the sight, the sound, the smell of it, morning, night, or noon. It's the feeling you're always welcome, and when you leave, we'll see you soon. It's the place you always go to, when you're with friends or you're all alone. It's the taste of Nelly's Diner, the place you feel at home.
Step back in time when you step into Nelly's Diner. It's the only place in town to taste Wild Bill Cody's Bison Burger, deep-fried in Nana's 100-year-old lard. Or try a tall stack of our award-winning PFBI pancakes. Dig into the signature Thang-a-Thang Salad. Or try an Uncle Dick Footlong. Anything you want and anytime you want it, we got it. All served up with a free side of smiles. We are right where we've been for 60 years at 1440 Zagacki Street downtown. Nelly's Diner. It's the taste of home you never had because your mom sucked at cooking.
It's the taste of Nelly's Diner that makes you feel at home.
All right, Dad. That was a good interview. Nelly's Diner, a classic. I'm worried about you, though. You keep doing this thing where you're making me talk, your voice. Like, I thought you had a bad week a few weeks ago, and then you got a little better, and now he seemed to be having another rough go of it. I'm being, like, me and Yeti were talking when you walked away before to get water. Not funny anymore, the cough thing. Like we need to fix this thing.
Believe me, it's certainly not funny to me either. And we're about to go on a 5-day cruise, and the idea of me coughing through a cruise ship is terrifying to my family and to other cruisers who I don't even know. So we're going to try to get a miracle cure before then.
That is true. Coughing is it's the one thing, like, from this pandemic.
Oh yeah.
When people cough around me now, I'm like more like, I used to not give a shit when people coughed around me. Now when people cough around me, I'm like, what's up with you? And you like get these uncontrollable fits of coughing where you're so insecure about it. And I do feel bad for you in these moments because people are definitely thinking you have COVID.
Right.
You're going to be in the buffet line and you'll have it to yourself. A couple of coughs. Heady play, actually, Greg.
A couple of coughs, cutting it up.
There you go. Now we're going to go to our next guest, and I don't think Christopher was, and Yeti probably too. I don't think you guys were as nearly as excited about this guest as I was and
no,
am.
Because I'm gonna be honest. I was the opposite of excited going into this. But hearing your genuine, like, you get genuinely moved by this game. This game genuinely had an effect on your life and the way you came up. And that comes across in this interview. So I actually enjoyed it after I was done with it. The guy that we're talking to, his mic situation is not great. So, you know, laugh along with us as we push through the audio. You can hear him. It's good enough where you can kind of hear what he's saying. But the old man that invented Strat-O-Matic baseball doesn't lead the league in audio quality.
No.
Chris Whittingham would have had a stroke if he was.
I thought of him the entire time I was cutting this one up.
Oh, my God.
So we want to just preface that and apologize for that on the front end. But I think it has a charm to it because he's such an old man that I didn't want to, like, go through the whole thing of, hey, sir, can you go into your say? Like, I was like, just, you know what? I'm just going to let the man have his audio. And but it was like I said, it's a nice interview. And so go ahead, Dad. You can tee it up because we're joined by a couple people.
Yeah, I just want to tee it up by saying that when I think of my childhood at 1440, most of you know by now that was my home address growing up. I think of two things, PFPI and Strat-O-Matic. Those were the two things, both sports related, baseball and football, that sort of tied together my childhood and my family and brought us all closer together. And particularly PFPI, because Strat-O-Matic was a solo endeavor, but it meant so much to me growing up. It really did. And I was genuinely, it was a cheap thrill for me to have on Hal Richman. I was like a fanboy. I mean, this guy's the inventor of Strat-O-Matic. And even if that means nothing to 99% of people listening, I want it to. And for the 1% of you, you're welcome.
And even though it sounds like my dad's getting emotional there, his voice is just crap.
Right. It does sound like I'm coming to tears. So that's good in this case. I have to tell you what a thrill it is to have Strat-O-Matic represented on our podcast today, because and we have with us Hal Richman, the inventor, the godfather of Strat-O-Matic baseball, and John Garcia, the company's chief content officer. Hal, I want to thank you personally, because the game you invented was a huge part of my life from about, I would say, from age 12 to about age 16, which is why I had no social life in high school, because I was in my bedroom playing about 10 games of Strat-O-Matic every single day for 4 years in a row. So thank you, Al.
Well, you're quite welcome. And I always appreciate stories like that. My age, I can use stories like that. They're always, they make the day seem shorter.
Hal, who are some of the people you've heard from over the years, either directly or secondhand, who've had stories like that? Because I know, just to drop one name, I know Bob Costas is a huge Strat-O-Matic fan who grew up playing and may still play for all I know. What kind of people have you heard from over the years with stories like that?
Well, going way back, Rocky Calavito, remember that name?
Sure.
He was an outfielder for the Indians, and I think maybe the Tigers, but isn't it? He was silly with the Indians. I used to have a friend who used to call me up and make up names. So a man calls me up, said, my name is Rocky Calavito. I don't believe him. And I said to him, where were you born? So I knew he was born in New York. I lived in New York. And he said, New York. And he gave me all the right answers. I said, I said to myself, my gosh, you must be Rocky Calavito. And that was that was a very funny call. And many, you know, at one point, I do know a fellow named Alan Schwartz once wrote a book on baseball. And he indicated at one point, 40% of all the baseball executives had a background of Strat-O-Matic.
Wow.
So that, you know, so the game has really impacted the sport greatly.
You know what I wonder, and this may be a question for John Garcia, your chief content officer. How did the game stay relevant? Because Strat-O-Matic, the way I first knew it, struck me as a game that could very easily have become a dinosaur and not adapt to the times when online happened, when digital happened. How did the Strat-O-Matic reinvent itself to stay so current?
Yeah, so we really view ourselves as a kind of a content company now, not just a game company. And that really started with Baseball Daily. So as you mentioned, like prior to Baseball Daily, Strat-O-Matic has always been looking back. We come out with the recently completed season right before the next one starts. And you know, you replay the season or in a draft league or many of the other multitude of ways that our gamers can play. But when we came out in Baseball Daily in 2015, for the first time, we were able to look forward. and project that afternoon's games, predict the upcoming season, really became forward looking for the first time. And immediately we were able to run simulations using that data and immediately received media attention because of that, actually. Yeah. In that 2015 World Series, we simulated that series ahead of time using that Baseball Daily set. And it was kind of remarkable how close our simulated games were to the actual results of the games. We matched the blown saves. This was the Mets Royals series. We hit home runs by Alcides Escobar and Alex Gordon and David Wright and Conforto. And then we had game five. And game five was that Matt Harvey game. We had his line exact through seven innings.
Wow.
Short of one strikeout. We differed in that we removed Harvey from that game. Mets won. Terry Collins did not. And, you know, that was the rest is history there. But that really got a large amount of attention. And we continued to simulate the World Series every year and similar type of accuracy. And then in 2020, when the world stopped, we stepped in to simulate the baseball season as it would have happened. Mm-hmm. We played out every single game on the schedule from April through the end of July when baseball returned. And it was kind of at that point, we have this huge data library. We have 150 years of baseball history. We have 60 plus seasons in football and basketball and hockey. And at that point really began leveraging that whole content library and creating for various media outlets. We're just able to use it in new ways that we haven't before. We have partnerships with NBC Sports Boston, where we run weekly simulations, Marquee Sports Network. Last year, we had 4 billion media impressions. Wow. Just on various simulations other ways. So, I mean, our game is as good as ever. The board game, our Windows game, we have new stuff coming out later this year. But it's not just our games, it's the media side too, our content side.
Were you guys able to predict the Astros cheating and banging on trash cans? Did you guys catch that?
We didn't know the cheating part at the time. That would have helped. Yeah.
So put it in perspective for me. What percentage of your business continues to be the old school cart, board game that I grew up on?
It's really about 50-50.
Really?
Yeah. We're always going to have our board game. It's a huge part of what we do and it will always be. And same with our Windows game. Stratomatic, I think it's the greatest game ever made and to be able to play it in various ways. Still as good as ever.
You gotta get that three column. You gotta get that three column.
You have to. You really do. I was saying that before we came on the air. If I had if Yaz was up at bat, and I rolled a 3-9 or a 3-10. I didn't even have to look. I knew somebody was scoring a run because of that that roll. I've been wondering this a long time. I've never had a chance to ask you or seen the question raised, but the game is so statistics-oriented. Why didn't you call it Stat-O-Matic instead of a Strat-O-Matic?
Strategy.
The name originated during a snowstorm in 1960, I guess.
Okay.
I was shoveling snow and I was going through the dictionary and there was a word called strategic-o-matical at that time in the dictionary, no more there.
Okay.
And so I was shoveling the snow and I had this word in my mind, strategic-o-matical, and I shortened it to Strat-O-Matic. And it's just, that was it, it was that simple, and the word has disappeared from the dictionary, but Strat-O-Matic itself, the word lives on, as you know.
Wow. I don't know why I'm imagining every year a holiday party where the invite list is all the creators of the most iconic board games of all time, where like the Monopoly guy and chess and checkers and Scrabble and Strat-O-Matic and Risk and Sorry, you guys all get together and have a bit like kind of like a master's dinner where you're like one guy picks the meal. I don't know. Like, is this happened? Give me some good stories.
The only story I can give you, because the Strat-O-Matic was really independent of all of that. We were not really part of the toy industry. We did business with a company called KB Toy and Hobby. I don't know if you remember that company. We had quite a few stores, and we knew the owner, but the man who ran the company. And he defined us really as almost more like a book than a toy or a game. And so I was never really, part of that industry. Mm. But the only thing I can tell you about the industry, I do know, was the man who created Monopoly. That was created during the Depression, and that was one of the reasons why I was so successful. It was about money, which no one had at the time. He tried to create a baseball game, but he failed. That I didn't know. But other than that, I had no connection at all with the toy industry.
Well, we're gonna let you guys go, Jerry Garcia from John Garcia.
Jerry rather. Garcia, that would be a good get.
Please edit that out. I used to be a deadhead back in my.
No, I got to leave that in. Now we can tease that we have Jerry Garcia on this episode.
John, thank you for joining us. But Hal, especially again, I want to tell you what a thrill it is to meet you because what you invented and created was truly a big part of my childhood, and I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, thank you for these comments. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and thanks.
And John, where should our audience like find you guys on? I don't know, like social. Or just give like a plug for whatever our audience can do to help and get in the game, as you guys might say.
Yeah, you can find us at stratomatic.com, strat-o-matic.com, and on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. All social media rolling over there too.
Cool. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Right on.
Jerry Garcia, what an asshole I am.
We should thank, I can't believe that guy Harold joined us from space. That was,
I know
that was quite the, that guy, really, like, that's our first guest that we've ever had actually willing to join from space.
I almost said something to him, but what are you going to do?
I mean, like, I just didn't want to go down the whole rabbit hole of trying to explain to that guy how to try to like potentially improve his audio. Like you can understand, it's almost funny and like endearing when an old person has terrible audio.
You never know.
So, Greg, is Hal Richmond the oldest guest that has ever been on this podcast?
Mm.
I believe so. Yeah. I'm trying to think who's second.
Yeah, who else would be?
Uncle Dick?
Uncle Dick.
Yeah, Uncle Dick would be second. Because he's 76 trombones. And then Kirchen's 65. Who else have we had that's like in the 60s or older? I can't even think of anybody.
How old's Dick Stockton? I don't know.
Oh, Dick Stockton. That's a good one. I forgot about Dick Stockton, broadcast Hall of Famer, who sang for us, What's It All About, Alfie?
These all I remember from that interview, actually, I do remember him singing. That was cool, too. And he also did play-by-play of me doing Serial, and I botched it, and I, like, talked over him.
Yes.
That was wonderful.
Besides those things, the only thing I think of when I think of the Dick Stockton interview is you guys giving false platitudes to each other. It was just a love fest between Greg Cody and Dick Stockton. Oh, I'm such a big fan of your career. Oh, man, I've listened to every game you've ever called. Oh, I've read all your calls. Like, and I was like, you guys are both full of shit right now.
Right.
Both of you.
Yeah. That's possibly true. I do think we both admire each other. He lives down here. I think he lives up in Palm Beach, an hour north of us. So the chances that he has been a reader of my columns.
All right, so maybe you're just full of it because you're not listening to these Dick Stockton. You don't even know when Dick Stockton's calling a game.
Right? Oh, yeah, I do. Very distinctive voice. I love me some Dick Stockton.
Dad, all right, let's get out of here. That was a good. I think we're not going to do any better than that. That was
you're
good.
Cruising next week, right?
Oh,
yeah,
we are,
man.
We should tease that. That's right. Next week's episode is going to be a treat. You are going to get to spend a night on a cruise ship with the Codys. It's going to be fun. We're going to do our first night on the cruise. We're going to document the whole thing, and we're going to send it to Yeti, and Yeti will put it together, and you will have an episode. Even though next week we will be in the middle of our cruise, we will put out an episode, and we're excited about it because it's going to be fun. Because Greg Cody, night one of a cruise can be a dangerous game. So,
hell yeah.
You know what interests me about that is that the Cody family, we're cruisers. We've been on a dozen or more cruises, but I'm not presumptuous. And I think that maybe, 60, 70% of our audience maybe has never been on a cruise ship. And so we're going to try to bring you into the whole experience of what it's like, particularly coming out of a pandemic We'll all be wearing hazmat suits, so everything's going to be fine.
I want a documentation of a 3 a.m. walk to the ice cream machine.
Yes.
Oh, that's what I did on the one cruise I've been on.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. At 3, I'm still losing at roulette. At 3. So we'll see how that goes.
All right, get us out of here, Greg.
Yeah, so say bye to the episode, Dad. Yeah,
hey, bye to the episode.
You're petering out.
Podcast family, thank you very much, as always. Unless I fall overboard, we'll see you. We'll see you next week. See ya. Bye bye. Love you.
We'll change the episode to "You're Now Listening to the Man Overboard Podcast" without Greg Cody.
That's right. That's not a bad name for a podcast, by the way. Man Overboard, MOB.